You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
If the saga of Rebecca has whetted your appetite for more true crime stories with the drama of Broadway, then this episode is for you. I am thrilled to welcome back my former colleague and current friend, Robert Viagas.
Hello, Ms. Ross. How are you?
How you doing?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Having fun as editor of Encore Monthly.
Yes. For all of you theater lovers out there, if you haven't already subscribed to Encore, a new very flashy glossy from Robert Viagas. It really is a beautiful magazine. Thank you for bringing it into the world during COVID after all of that.
COVID was
when
the best time.
People
had no Broadway, and this was their way to stay connected with Broadway.
Well, thank you for bringing us Encore, and thank you for putting my event with Bernadette Peters on the inaugural cover.
It was a wonderful event. It was in the darkest moments of this whole thing. You guys organized big stars, incredibly talented people, to stand in Times Square and sing show tunes, and you know, it just doesn't get any better than that. I was proud to put that on the cover.
Well, thank you for having us, and thank you for coming onto my little old podcast. One of my favorite things about Mr. Viagas here is that he's a great theater historian, a wonderful journalist, and a big old gossip. And so if you ever want to know anything of what's going on, really know behind the scenes.
Come sit beside me.
Exactly. Come sit beside Viagas. So I knew that when I wanted to do an episode all about the crazy ass shit that has gone on throughout the years on Broadway, I knew exactly who to call. And so I'm very thrilled to have you on, Viagas.
I'm happy to be here. And I love talking about all the things that go on the amazing Broadway, especially when times when there's as much drama backstage as there is on the stage.
Exactly. All right. So let's get started. My first story that I have selected is the notorious producer, Garth Rubinsky.
Oy vey.
So if you were a fan of or even around in the theaters in the late 90s, early 2000s, you knew about mega producer Garth Rubinsky. He won 3 Tonys for shows like Kiss of the Spider Woman, Showboat, Fosse. He also was the guy behind the amazing revival of Ragtime with Brian Stokes.
Well, the original Ragtime.
Sorry, excuse me. The original Ragtime. Mm-hmm. With Brian Stokes Mitchell, Lodge McDonald, Maren Mazey. He was a big shot on Broadway. Tell me a little bit about Grabinski when he came on the scene.
Grabinski had been in movies. He got involved with the Cineplex Odeon sort of scandal. And then he decided that he wanted to work in the theater. And you know something? I have a little bit of sympathy for him because his dreams were always so much bigger than his pocketbook. He had these ideas of these big shows. I mean, look at Ragtime. He just put together all the most talented people on the stage, behind the scenes, and he just put together this thing that was incredible to look at, incredibly inspiring. And there is just no way that show could ever have really turned a profit. It really needed to be in a much bigger theater, of which there was none. And it needed to run for 25 years, which it just wound up not doing. Unfortunately, it opened opposite The Lion King, and Lion King scooped up a lot of awards that I know they were kind of hoping to get for themselves. But it was an incredible show. And by the way, we mentioned the theater. He actually was responsible for taking two of the old Broadway theaters and putting the money out there to essentially tear them down. They just kept part of the facade. Built a gorgeous new theater, one of the biggest on Broadway, found a sponsor, Ford Automobiles, and it became the Ford Center. And it was he created a new Broadway theater. And he was one of the people who was not Disney, who was able to get a theater that was revived on 42nd Street at a time when all those that area was so run down. So, you know, give him props for that. It was only one little problem. He just didn't have the money.
A little bit of a problem of forgery.
That's right.
To the tune. Now he's Canadian, and so he was convicted in a Canadian court of defrauding a a forgery and defrauding shareholders of about 500 million Canadian dollars. Now, the Canadian dollars is not quite up to snuff with the US dollars. However, that's still a large amount of money, Viagas.
Yes.
So he wasn't exactly just a little guy with big dreams.
Well, no, he was a big guy with way too big dreams, unfortunately. And it was like a classic Ponzi scheme. I think at some point he thought, constantly borrowing from Peter to pay Paul, that eventually Peter wouldn't notice it, but eventually Peter did.
But wasn't he also cooking the books? Like they were two.
He had
sets
two
of
completely
books
separate sets. Yes, he did. He had one that he would show people, and then the actual one. And people suspected something was going on when they did that big revival of Candide, which opened at the what's now the Gershwin Theater. There was just nobody in that theater. That theater, there were sage brushes were rolling down the aisles in that theater. And he kept saying, no, it's great. It's doing great. It's doing great. And we just think they must be losing a bomb of money on this show. That show, unfortunately, is one of those shows that just never really made money. But no, he would insist. And if you even questioned, as we did many times, where's all the money coming from? Man, he would get angry. He would bang on the desk. He did not like to be questioned. And he would call, he'd get like two or three calls in the course of an afternoon because he'd get mad, he'd call and yell, and then he'd calm down, and then he'd get mad again, and then he'd call and yell again. But in the end, he spent time in jail.
In 2009, he was sentenced to 7 years. And again, this was in Canada.
Yeah.
He was also charged with something in the U.S., but he never came back to the United States. So he was a fugitive from the U.S. while he was in prison, right?
That's correct.
What's crazy to me is, so in 2009, he gets sentenced to 7 years in Canada. He gets out of jail and he starts producing again.
I hate to tell you, he has a show that he's putting up now.
I know. So before the show he's putting up now, which is going to Broadway, which is wild to me.
Paradise Square. It's
yes.
Called.
He has this show, Paradise Square, that's coming. It's Moises Kaufman is directing it. Bill T. Jones is the choreographer. It's about the draft riot. It's setting before the draft riots in the early, the late 1800s, right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. And it's a New York, something that happened in New York. It's based on a historical New York, a thing that happened here.
So he's allowed to produce that, and he is coming to the U.S. It was produced at Berkeley, and then it's supposed to be coming to Broadway because the U.S. charges, of which he was on the lam for, were subsequently dropped after 10 years. But even when he was still on the lam, after he got out of jail, he produced a show. He produced a show with Vicki Clark.
You know, it reminds me of the scene at the very end of the movie of The Producers, where even though they've been sent to jail for ripping people off, they're in jail and they're putting together a musical called Prisoners of Love. And once again, they're trying to defraud people out of money.
Well, I guess, you know, as Berkeley Rep, which put on Paradise Square, the organizers there believe that everybody deserves a second chance and that, you know, he served his time. And so we'll see if that makes a big Broadway comeback. But wow, wouldn't that be something if he actually had a hit after all that mishigas?
Well, you know, I was comparing it to Prisoners of Love. He's not in jail now. And in fact, the show is going to try out in Chicago at the Niederlander Theater there. And I'm sure the Niederlanders, after all they've been through and all he's been through, I'm sure that they have checked those books seven ways to Sunday. I'm sure they are being very, very careful.
Wow. Well, we'll see what comes of that. But that was one of the more interesting white collar crimes of Broadway. My next big Broadway drama is probably one of my favorite because it's just so silly. Well, it's not silly to the people it happened to, but in hindsight, it is quite silly. And that is Jeremy Piven and Sushi Gate. Now, the setting of this one is in 2008, Jeremy Piven is a really big star. He stars in the HBO show Entourage. And he is then cast for his Broadway, I think it's his Broadway debut, even though he comes from a long line of theater, a theater family, but I think it's his Broadway debut. He's in a big revival of Speed the Plow, which became famous as Madonna's one and only Broadway credit. But he's cast in the revival opposite Raul Esparza and Elizabeth Moss from Mad Men. So this is a big, ritzy, limited revival that's coming back to Broadway in 2008. Soon into their rehearsals, Piven starts citing some health concerns as to why he is missing some rehearsals and ultimately previews and things like that because of a myriad of different illnesses, one of which includes mercury poisoning from eating too much sushi.
He says he ate too much sushi and got mercury poisoning. You have to eat a lot of sushi to get mercury poisoning. But of all the reasons that he could have given, that was the reason that he gave. And that's why he said, I've been missing performances. I just can't go on with this show.
Yes. And then he ultimately drops out of the show. Now, the person he goes up against in this battle is the producer, Jeffrey Richards.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jeffrey a Richards wonderful is guy. He's a good guy, Jeff Richards.
Are you being facetious?
No, I'm not. He puts on a lot of wonderful revivals.
He does, but he's a tough cookie.
Oh, he's a tough cookie. No question
about
that.
He's a very, very tough cookie and a peculiar one at that. And so Jeffrey Richards is no wilting wallflower. It's not somebody I would want to go up against in any argument because he's a very tough cookie. So Jeffrey Richards, who, as you know, puts up a lot of wonderful shows and is a premier producer of lots of Mammoth shows, whether or not you like Mammoth is neither here nor there, but Jeffrey Richards is a big champion of him. He and Neil Pepe, who is the director, they go to seek some sort of arbitration with Actors Equity after Piven drops out because of mercury poisoning. Mm-hmm. What comes out of that disagreement is a whole lot of mudslinging. He says, I was on death's door. I was at the hospital. I have been eating fish twice a day for 20 years, so I'm exhausted. I have mercury poisoning. I also have Epstein-Barr, which I think is also what's it called? The kissing disease. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm talking about? Mono.
Mononucleosis.
Mono. It's what everybody got in college and had to sit out a couple of weeks of college from. So he says, I have mono and I have mercury poisoning from eating fish twice a day and I'm at death's door. To which they reply, nah, you were at Britney Spears' birthday party, living it up. You were at cocktail parties. You've been out partying all the live long day. And they went into arbitration because of this. Do you know what can you tell me what the outcome was after all this infighting due to spicy tuna roll?
They just replaced him. And now he's involved with a Me Too issue.
Oh, is he? I didn't realize that.
Yes, ma'am.
What kind of Me Too issue?
A woman on the set of Entourage says that he groped her breasts and buttocks, and he's denying it.
Well, it's funny it's not funny, but it's interesting. After all of this, he drops out of the show. I think William H. Macy replaced him, who I saw. It was actually an excellent production. Bill Macy was amazing in it.
He's always great. They took a step up, I have to say.
Well, did you see Piven in it?
I saw Macy in it, not Piven.
Okay. So he drops out and never to return. The show still recoups. And Bill Macy is great in it. But Piven kind of became the butt of a lot of jokes because of this. And he, after Entourage, he had that Miss Pepperidge, I think it was called, on that TV show on PBS. And now he's doing stand-up comedy. But I don't know that he really made any sort of big, huge career moves after that.
Well, you know, there's so many actors out there, so many people working hard and competing with each other. You really don't want to have any kind of a a black mark next to your name, no matter how talented you are. I mean, you and I could sit here and we could mention a number of actresses and actors who they've just gotten a bad rep. That they're people who was, they may have pushed somebody around, something got into the newspapers, and now these people have a difficult time getting work. People just don't want to work with them. They appreciate their talent, but they don't want to have to go through the tsuris of dealing with these people on a day after day basis. And there's a lot of people in the industry you can put in that category.
Yeah.
Or who were in the industry.
We won't mention names. We won't mention too many names. But I will say that actors, after going through arbitration with Actors Equity, they actually ended up coming down on the side of Piven after all of this, that he was mm-hmm. ill and that he didn't hold any fault in the matter. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what was said in arbitration?
I do not. What did they say?
They basically said that he had said, please have your doctor check me out to the production, and that the doctors didn't end up checking him out. And, all of the examples of him going out and partying were few and far between. And it wasn't him going out and partying every single night, but it was just a couple of blowing off steam moments here or there. I mean, if I was invited to Britney Spears' birthday party, I'd go to it no matter how much sushi I'd eaten the night before. But Actors Equity did come down on his side. He exited not so gracefully. William H. Macy ended up taking over for him. The show did quite well, and Piven never worked on Broadway again. So I guess TBD as to whether or not anyone will ever take him on again. But that was
he did do that HBO series Entourage. That was a pretty big deal for him. That was before all this. This kind of happened after this. I mean, he was appearing on the show at the time of the arbitration when he was quote unquote completely exonerated. But I think some of the damage was still.
Well, Entourage was before. That's why he was so famous. Uh-huh. Entourage was before the show. He was famous. Then he was in Speed the Plow. But then ever since then, nothing really came out. Like I said, he was in that Mrs. Pepper jizz. I don't know how it said. PBS show after that, but never came back to Broadway. So I guess TBD mm-hmm. as to whether or not anybody else will take him on. So,
well, you know, you have to be careful. You know, you have to tread carefully. And something like that, even though he was found in arbitration to have been justified. A lot of the damage was already done.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. Like you said, I don't know that anybody would necessarily want to undergo that liability after all of that craziness comes out after it. But anyway, okay, on to our next scandal. This one is also very interesting and probably not very well known to people who weren't alive or around in the 1970s. And that is of probably one of the biggest white-collar criminals to be associated with the stage, Miss Adela Holzer.
Adela. Yes. Adela is cool. She did she came from Spain, first of all. She was an immigrant. And she got involved in all sorts of businesses, food importing and all sorts of things. But she had an eye on Broadway. And I have to say, even with all her crimes for which she did serve time, a lot of them were not specifically related to Broadway. She wasn't trying to steal money from Broadway investors or defraud people. She defrauded other people to get money. To get money for Broadway so that she can pursue her hobby.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUPS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So she, in the 70s, she's the wife of, I believe, of a shipping magnate. Mm-hmm. She has numerous degrees, or at least that's what she says. A lot of what she says to the press can't necessarily be verified.
That's
so
right.
Everything, she's a big take it with a grain of salt, but she's a wife of a shipping magnate. She has numerous degrees. She's living in a ritzy townhouse on the Upper East Side. And she's one of the few women that's able to play in the big leagues of theater producing in the 70s. She starts her career off investing in hair.
Right.
So she produces a show with Dustin Hoffman. She produces the original Ritz, Terrence McNally's right. The Ritz. So she's a bona fide big deal on Broadway in the 70s.
Terrence McNally, who wrote the book to Ragtime. So he,
yes, of course.
Terrence is on the periphery of all these scams. He was a great guy, but he was on the periphery of these scams.
I guess, yeah. So in 79, Adela is indicted for running a Ponzi scheme on a Toyota dealership in Indonesia. And her lawyer is Roy Cohn.
Mm-hmm.
So Roy Cohn is one of her lawyers. In that first Ponzi scheme that she's indicted in, one of the investors in that scheme was a man named Jeffrey Pickauer, who then was later implicated in the Bernie Madoff scam. So she has lots of interesting characters all around her throughout her life. So she serves 2 years in prison. She gets out of prison. And then, this is my favorite part, she produces a show about Joseph McCarthy called mm-hmm. Senator Joe. Did
a
you
musical.
Know this? Yes,
oh,
a
yes.
musical.
A musical, Senator Joe.
So, of course, Roy Cohn was...
Roy Cohn's nemesis, or Roy Cohn was his nemesis.
Well, no, wasn't
no, he? No, I'm sorry. No, they were... I'm sorry. They were on
he
the
was
same
the
side.
Hatchet man.
They
he
were
was
on
Mark-
the same side. Yeah, yes,
so
yes, yes.
Cohn, famously of... lots of things, including Donald Trump's lawyer and very
Angels
famously depicted in Angels in America, was right. Joe McCarthy's hatchet man pursuing communists in the mm-hmm. United States. She gets out of jail after being represented by Roy Cohn and then makes a musical about Joe McCarthy. Crazy.
Did you see it?
No, I haven't seen it. Have you seen it?
I saw it twice.
Oh, God.
It tried out at Westport Country Playhouse, and I got to see it when it was up there, and then I saw it when it was on Broadway.
Was it any good?
There were, you know, people talk about Carrie and, like, these moments, these sort of springtime for Hitler moments mm-hmm. in Carrie. There were plenty of them in Senator Joe, plenty. There was a number where they had all these dancing
Wait, like what, real what, springtime for Hitler moments?
No, like the numbers would end and people wouldn't applaud or boo. They would just be stunned into silence.
Mm, okay, so it was great. There should be a revival really quick, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I liked the dancing blood corpuscle scene. There was one scene that took place, I believe, in his liver or something. And the blood corpuscles were dancing and singing. It was very peculiar.
Huh. Interesting. So Dear Adela is then arrested again after
again.
She produces a show. She ends up, all in all, I don't know how many times she was arrested, but she ends up spending 14 years of her life behind bars for all different types of schemes. One scheme involves her having an imaginary marriage to David Rockefeller.
Yes, she claimed to be his secret wife.
Yes.
And that's bad, but people believed it and gave her money.
Yes, people believed it and gave her money.
Of course, somebody who's married to Rockefeller needs money, but she would use it to raise money.
Yes, and she bolstered the lie with a fake marriage license and a framed photo of him at her bedside that was clipped out of a magazine. And then when the detectives approached her on East 43rd Street to make her arrest, she mm-hmm. ran and was pinned to the hood of a car and handcuffs. And she said, I ran away because I thought you were muggers. Mm-hmm. This is a fantastic story. I think this needs to be a play.
She's a musical. She is a musical. Totally a musical.
Then,
no question about it.
She's not done yet.
Oh, no.
Then she's in her 70s. In 2001, she has another scheme. This time she has another relationship, another fake relationship. This time, did you hear the next fake relationship that she was in?
Go ahead.
Strom Thurmond.
The senator.
I don't know how you go from David Rockefeller to Strom Thurmond, but here we are. So, and then even when she's behind bars, she's very enterprising. She was jailed with Jean Harris, who was the woman who was convicted in the murder
Mayflower
of
Madam.
The Scarsdale Diet
Scarsdale doctor. Diet doctor, right?
Yes. So she serves as her like publicist behind bars. So she's a fascinating woman. Anyway, like I said, she goes to jail for 14 years and ends up getting out, released in prison in 2010 in her 80s. And she just died last year.
2019 she died.
I think it was 2020. September 2020 was when her obit ran in the New York Times. Either way, she just died. The funniest part of the obituary was they didn't really know her age. Because she was told so many lies, they said she could be anywhere in her 90s. They didn't know her exact age.
That's right. Actually, as we're talking, I just looked this up. She died September 1st, 2019.
Okay.
And her birth, it says circa December 14th, 1928. Even they weren't sure.
Fascinating. What a fascinating
By the way, I'm sorry. I called her Mayflower Madam before. That was completely wrong. Scarsdale Diet Doctor.
Yes.
I knew it was one of those tabloidy names, but I just want to correct that very quickly.
Yes. Either way, fascinating lady.
Yes. Well, you know, she came to America and she just decided to pursue her dream. And you know, she didn't really have you know, guidelines. She just was like, I'm going to go out and I'm going to get what I want. And if I need to make up some things, everybody makes up things. So I'm going to make things up too.
If you're going to make up somebody to get married to, probably not Strom Thurmond. Of all the people. Okay. Right.
Also not a very popular senator.
Yeah, it's such a very bizarre. Oh, wow. How bizarre. This is before your times. You never met her or really came into contact with her.
I met her a couple of times. No, I did. I was introduced to her. She was also a big party girl. She used to go out to discos and things.
Oh, wow.
And when I was very, very young, I did. And when I was hanging around with the Chorus Line people because of my working on that book about them, we crossed paths with her a couple of times.
Anything memorable about your encounters with her?
Her hair. She had, you know, at a time, this was now the early 80s, I would say. Early mid 80s, in a decade that was devoted to big hair, she had amazing hair. She had it was a helmet. It was incredible. It was power hair. No question about it.
Interesting. Well, I still think there may be a musical here about her. How interesting. Okay. Well, our next, I think this is probably going to be our last one because we've had. There's certainly a lot more, Viagas. We might have to do episode two, but. This next one, boy, this is a doozy. So this one is about James Barber, which came a little bit later in Broadway history. Mm-hmm. So in 2006, James Barber, who was the star of Beauty and the Beast, Jane Eyre, he was charged with committing 5 felony counts of criminal sexual acts and sexual abuse against a 15-year-old girl. Ugh. Mm-hmm. So the story is that in 2001, when he was in Jane Eyre, this girl who was 15 goes to the show with her parents. She goes backstage alone into his dressing room where she says that she is sexually abused. And then He then takes the girl and her parents out to dinner and continues to sexually touch her under the table throughout the meal. That is what prosecutors said upon his arrest in 2006. Yes. And then on top of that, they had another encounter the month following to go see a friend of his perform in a show. And then he took her back to his apartment on the Upper West Side, where, again, prosecutors claimed that they engaged in oral sex. So this is a very, very heavy charge and was a very big story back in 2006 when all this happened. I remember, you know, it was the cover of the Post many times about him because he was the Beast. I think he was the Beast at the time, right? Or he had just come off that run. Do you remember?
I do not remember exactly what the timing was there.
But it was a lot about him having been the Beast on Broadway and now right. these beastly...
And now he's a beast, right?
Yeah, that's accusations right, against him happen. The girl was 15 years old at the, and then when she brought these allegations against him, she was 20. At the time, his attorneys claimed that she was doing this just because, you know, the statute of limitations were about to expire. But he ends up a year later in 2007 pleading not guilty. No, sorry, excuse me, pleading guilty.
Yes, he pleaded guilty.
To several charges. Sorry, he in 2008, he ended up pleading guilty to lesser charges of endangering a minor.
Right.
And he ends up spending, I think, between 30 to 60 36
days. He spent 36 at Rikers days, Island.
At Rikers.
Mm-hmm. But he also had to go public with it, and he had to admit it, and he had to, you know, apologize.
But it was a misdemeanor, so he right. didn't have to plead. He did not have to register as a sex offender. I think that was the big deal that they cut. But my goodness, this was a very, very yucky thing. The woman who we will not name here, but the woman who was a girl then, she is an actress and is a fairly well-known actress.
Mm-hmm.
But he ended up, I don't know if this would have happened now. I would think that things would be a lot different for Barbara, but he ends up going on to booking a lot of shows, one of which is Rebecca.
Rebecca, that's right. He was supposed to be leading man in Rebecca.
So, wow.
He is a talented guy, and I think there are some people, you know, and certainly before the Me Too movement, there was a lot of this attitude of boys will be boys, and you know, he said he's sorry and he paid his debt to society, and I think a lot of those things don't fly anymore.
Oh, thank God!
Especially when there's a pattern. Especially when there's a pattern like this.
Yes, and there seem to have been a couple of allegations, although none of them substantiated against Barber.
Mm-hmm.
But this girl was 15 years old, which is absolutely disgusting, and somehow has also been part of the Rebecca story as well, is sexual abuse against minors. So this one, boy, but then it was really flabbergasted then and still am now about it. I don't know how Barber still gets cast in things, but he was recently, I mean, a couple of years ago, he was the Phantom for a long time, for like 3 years mm-hmm. or something. And these crimes resurfaced and there was a big hubbub about it, but he still went on as the Phantom. Do you remember that?
Very, very well. I was surprised. And it just shows that there are, he must have had friends in the business who wanted to make sure he continued to get employment. And he was a talented performer. But if you're going to protect your female employees of all ages, you know, you have to consider that. You have to consider that strongly. I feel sorry for the women who had to work with him, knowing what they knew.
Oh, yes, I do too. But he keeps on working, although never really, you know, became a huge superstar, but had very, you know, fairly big roles on Broadway. One of my favorite odd factoids about him was then he also became a big headliner for Scientology events. I don't know if he ended up being a Scientologist himself or what it is, but he headlined a number of different paid appearances for David Miscavige and the folks, the dear and wonderful folks over at Scientology.
That's right. And he has a group of people who protect him. And some people who feel that he's wronged by some of these things, even though he's pleaded guilty. You know, it's one thing. If I know there's a lot of argument. People say, well, he's innocent until proven guilty. But in this particular case, not only was he proven guilty, he admitted guilt. He admitted that he did it. So and it's a mystery to me how some of these, when there's so many other people who toe the line and who are careful and who are respectful.
And aren't total creeps. Gross.
And who care yeah. about the women that they work with as professionals. That's the thing. Thinking of women as your playthings. What about that song in How to Succeed in Business?
Women. These weren't women. They were girls.
Right. That's right.
To females. Me, this holds. It's gross. I don't know how anybody employs him. Absolutely disgusting, vile. But again, some people get their due and then others somehow just float through it. I mean, he was in Rikers, but my goodness, getting cast in the lead role of one of the biggest shows on Broadway. That doesn't really seem like someone who seems like someone got away with a little bit too much. If you ask my opinion,
he was also in Tale of Two Cities. Remember, he was in Tale of Two Cities.
Yes, I do remember he was in Tale of Two Cities because mm-hmm. I do remember meeting him when I was a publicist, mm-hmm. and he came to me for some publicity of advice, of which I gave him none because gross. So, in any event,
good for you.
Well, ugh. How could you do good publicity for somebody with, I mean, molesting children is a bridge too far. This isn't just, you know, oops, some bad TikTok video. I mean, that's mm-hmm. a very big and bad, horrible thing. So in any event, those were our scandals for today. If you would like us to talk about more scandals, of which there are many, many, many in this grand old show biz, please let me know. I'm on Instagram at Blake Ross NY. Let me know what scandals are your favorite, and then I'll bring back my pal, the August, and we'll talk about some more scandals of Broadway. What do you think about that, the August?
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to. I mean, there's some of these scandals are percolating right now.
Exactly. Oh, geez. More to come. Thank you for joining us, the August.
My pleasure. Thank you, Blake.
For sources and more information on the Rebecca scandal, visit bpn.fm/BERT.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.